All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Today is December 22nd, 2025. We got a weird week this week with the holiday falling right in the middle of it. But we are off to the races first thing Monday. The big story going on this morning, silver, gold, platinum, palladium while we're at it, precious metals are ripping across the board here. Let's start with my favorite of the shinies, silver, $69 we hit overnight. We actually went as high as about $69.40. When I went to bed last night, people were flirting with $70 in their Twitter feeds. Everybody's getting all kinds of excited. Maybe we hit that one. Maybe Mr. Slammy is waiting right around the corner for us. Who knows? But silver's just on a tear here. Gold is along for the ride as well. $44.50 we hit for the front month gold contract overnight. A new all-time high for gold. Platinum is saying, hold my beer over here. $2,100 an ounce for platinum. What the hell is going on in precious metals this morning? Silver back into backwardation, albeit by just about a penny when I hit the live button. Backwardation, that's when silver right now, spot price in London, goes just a little bit higher than the price of the front month silver futures contract, which is silver like 2 months from now or 3 months from now. That's indicative of the supply strain coming back in London, maybe shortages in London again. That's what took us sharply higher in September and October, which led to that disorderly spike in silver prices. Ultimately, Mr. Slammy did arrive. We had a large flow of metal from New York into London, alleviated that shortage. Silver sold off a couple of bucks, came right back with those shenanigans on Black Friday. You guys remember the glitch at the cooling issue, the one data center that shut down the silver market conveniently right in the middle of a price rally. And silver has just been on a disorderly tear to the upside ever since. And we've got some pretty crazy statistics are going on here now. The gold to silver ratio down around 64. We hit like 63.2 last night. These are lows in the gold to silver ratio that we haven't seen since the height of the silver squeeze on February 1st in 2021. Silver has vastly outperformed gold over the last few months after gold vastly outperformed silver in the months leading up to that. Another interesting tidbit, silver is now more valuable than a barrel of oil. We hit that one late last week. The last time that happened, not since 1980, when I was but a wee lad, just a baby back then, and the Hunt brothers were trying to corner the silver market. That's the last time an ounce of silver was worth more than a barrel of oil. So, guys, you know, we're in uncharted territory here with my favorite of the shinies. Could we keep going? Sure. Could we see a repeat of 2011? Slam, down we go, $20 all of a sudden in one afternoon? Sure. Nobody really knows right here. The market's not really functioning the way it's supposed to, but it is certainly an exciting time. That's putting it mildly, I think. I know we got a lot of silver stackers on this channel. I know we got a lot of precious metals enthusiasts. So what's going on here? What's driving all this? Why are these metals running like this? Is it the rate cuts at the Fed? I mean, if you put on CNBC, everybody's like optimism about a rate cut in January is propelling precious metals higher. Maybe that's contributing. Is that the main thing? Probably not. Could it be the Fed and their money printer, which to this day, I'm still amazed at how the financial press just kind of swallowed that one, asked no questions, and then moves on when Jerome Powell's like, yeah, we're going to resume Treasury bill securities purchases up to $40 billion a month. We're printing money again already. Oh, but how about those Jets, huh? How about that Eagles game? Press is just like, oh, yeah, we don't have any questions about that. I mean, why would journalists do the whole journalism thing? You know, it's not like inflation has like seen the standard of living for the average person take a nosedive over the last few years. Sure, help yourself to a few more trillion. The world just absorbed that one. Maybe that's driving metals higher. Maybe it's supply shortages. Like we said, we're back into backwardation, or at least flirting with backwardation this morning. Are we back to those regional geographic dislocations in the silver market? Maybe it's geopolitics. We've got more issues going on with Venezuela this morning. We'll talk about that in a second. So what is it? Rate cuts, money printing, supply shortages, geopolitics? Yes, it's all of these things. These are all reasons driving metals higher this morning. But again, guys, I'm going to use the term, this is disorderly. I was expecting a price slam on Friday. It didn't come. We've seen the margin requirements be increased several times over the last few months. So they're already kind of tamping down this enthusiasm. I don't really know where metals goes from here. Are we going to keep running up in a straight line? Honestly, when I see metals going up in a straight line, as exciting as it is, you have to wonder what is wrong under the hood. It's not supposed to do that. When you own a lot of metal, it's great. Don't get me wrong. But something else is going wrong somewhere else. Equal opposite reactions, the whole Newtonian physics things. Do we need to get into that? Probably not. Also going on this morning, Venezuela. Keep an eye on that one. Over the weekend, we had a second oil tanker was seized on Saturday by the U.S. Navy. We are effectively blockading Venezuela now. We're trying to strangle the Maduro regime without firing a shot. I guess we've already fired shots, so I don't know if we can even say that. With firing fewer shots, I should say. We seized that second tanker on Saturday. And then yesterday, there was an attempt to seize a third tanker. And for whatever reason, they didn't actually seize it. It is currently being pursued, this third tanker. I don't know if there are security forces on board this tanker and that made them think twice. Regardless of what's going on with this third tanker, they're still steaming towards Venezuela, kind of effectively trying to break the blockade, run the blockade. So we're at the point with this third one. Are we going to shoot at it? Are we going to try to seize it under fire? Are there security forces on board? Are we going to have is there just going to turn into a gunfight? Are we going to sink it? I mean, the bluff is being called here. So pay attention to what's going on in Venezuela. Things could very easily escalate there. It's obviously got a lot to do with oil, probably more to do with oil than any of this narco-terrorist stuff. Also, keep an eye on the Iranians here. This is kind of interesting because Venezuela's friendly with the Iranians, friendly with the Russians and the Chinese. If the U.S. were to somehow topple the Maduro regime and get a U.S.-friendly regime in its place, and U.S. oil majors were to come start developing those Venezuelan oil fields, opening up that market to, say, the Europeans who would love to buy a lot of it, and our refineries would love that Venezuelan oil, well, that would weaken the Iranians strategically, wouldn't it? And over the weekend, the Iranians were doing some ballistic missile testing. So watch that Strait of Hormuz as well. We could be heading to a geopolitical CF in the Caribbean right now. Also going on with Larry Ellison. And Oracle, this is an interesting story. Yep. Larry Ellison has agreed to personally guarantee Paramount's $40.4 billion bid for Warner Brothers. Remember, we've got this hostile takeover, competitive bid going on for Warner Brothers who put themselves up for sale. Right now, Netflix is in the lead and favored more likely to buy Warner Brothers. There's worried about Netflix getting a streaming monopoly in that situation because they'd be getting HBO Max. Along with that, Paramount is in the contention for this. Paramount also wants to buy Warner Brothers. There were some worries about Paramount's ability to raise the debt needed to pay for Warner Brothers. And Paramount is led by Larry Ellison's son. And in comes Larry Ellison with the family trust. And he says, hey, I am going to personally guarantee that $40 billion bid. And you can trust me because I own 1.16 billion shares of Oracle stock. Well, that's like a cool $200 billion. Yeah. You know, it's nice, like, when you're just getting started, you know, sometimes mom and dad co-sign for a credit card or an overdraft on your checking account, or maybe mom and dad help you buy your first house, or maybe mom and dad personally backstop your $40 billion hostile takeover for Warner Brothers Studios. It's nice when mom and dad are helping out the kids, see the family bonding like that. Now, look, this could be interesting because let's say this happens and somehow Paramount gets it and Paramount has some trouble raising the debt, it could result in forced selling of Oracle shares, kind of like when Elon Musk sold a lot of Tesla stock in order to raise the cash to buy Twitter. We could see something of a similar size happen with Oracle. And of course, Oracle is front and center in the AI mania, in the AI bubble. So there's a lot of intersecting stories going on there. We've also got NVIDIA's in the news today. They hope to or aim to begin shipping up to, this is like a strategically dropped story about aim to inflate the AI bubble this morning, talking about selling H200s to the Chinese. And, you know, there's a lot of we aim to begin, we hope to reach as much as 40 to 80,000 H200 chips. Now, the Chinese still haven't said they want them. Actually, the Chinese have told their companies not to use them. So there may be some internal deliberations going on between Chinese companies and their government about how many of these NVIDIA chips they're actually going to get. But NVIDIA is very eager to come out and assure us this morning that they're going to start selling even more chips to China, which is kind of like, why do we even care about this? Because we all know they've been selling these chips to the Chinese anyway via the many smuggling networks, which we've documented on this channel. And of course, their sales by geographic location to Singapore and Malaysia, which is all chips ultimately going to China anyway. We got some trade war updates this morning. Jim Beam has halted production at their main distillery in Kentucky, one of the big punching bags for the rest of the world in retaliation for U.S. tariffs. Besides farmers, has been the whiskey industry, in particular Kentucky bourbon. Jim Beam shutting down their distillery after some of the embargoes, retaliatory tariffs, boycotts, things like that going on in other countries. China, meanwhile, is putting tariffs on European dairy products this morning, going after the French cheese. All right, so the trade war is still alive and well. We don't get many trade war headlines these days. The Supreme Court remains a big question mark. Are these tariffs going to just be like blanket wiped away and then come back piecemeal under Section 232? We just don't know. China Vanka has won themselves a couple weeks stay of execution. They voted to extend their grace period by up to a month, so Vanka won't be collapsing. That's the biggest real estate developer left alive in China. Japan has restarted the world's largest nuclear power plant, which has been shuttered for the last 15 years, pretty much since the Tohoku earthquake that took out Fukushima. And Klarna is in the news. The United States of Klarna. We've got that headline from Bloomberg this morning. Buy now, pay later usage way up in the United States, leading to some, we'll say, misleading signals from the consumer about the health of the U.S. consumer. People just taking on more debt in order to buy more crap. Well, what's the worst that could happen? Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it because we do this one pretty much every day. Real quick, some channel housekeeping, guys. Because of the holiday this week, we are going to have a show today, obviously. Tomorrow and Wednesday, Christmas Eve, we'll be doing our morning update as normal. Obviously, no show Thursday for Christmas. And we're going to take the day after Christmas off as well, even though markets are open on Friday. I just find it's pretty hard to get up and do a show the day after Christmas. So we're going to take the day off for that one. And for you guys on Patreon, we are going to do our weekly get-together on Zoom on Sunday this week instead of Friday. I'll be putting that link out later on. All right, looking right now at the S&P 500, stocks having a pretty good morning, up 30 points here, 0.44% to the upside. The Dow, meanwhile, is up 52 points after being in the red for most of the morning, 0.11% higher for the Dow. And the NASDAQ is up 162 points, 0.64%. Stocks up pretty much across the board this morning. The dollar's a little bit weaker here, down 23 basis points at 98.37, slightly weaker dollar, putting some upward pressure on asset prices this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are largely unchanged here. Little bit of a move. 30-year yield is at 4.839. That's higher by 1 point. The 10-year is at 4.163, down by almost 2 points. The 2-year, meanwhile, 3.500. That is up by 1.5. And the 1 month is at 3.627, up by just a half a point. Not a lot of movement in bonds this morning. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are hovering right around $90,075 as priced on Coinbase, up a little bit from yesterday. Bitcoin has had a good couple of days. It looks like late last week, we went down as low as about $84,700, caught a little bit of a bounce here, but Bitcoin has been trading between the mid 80s and low 90s for pretty much the last month. And of course, all the action today is on the commodities board. Let's start with gold. We've got spot gold, 44.27. That is a new all-time high, up $88.70 or 2% higher. Meanwhile, February COMEX gold futures, 44.62. Also an all-time high, up $75 or 1.7%. Gold is ripping here. And honestly, that 2% move in gold, that's the small one this morning. Because look at silver. Back above $69, spot silver $69.09. That's up $1.92 or 2.87% higher. March silver $69.07, up $1.58, 2.3% higher. Also, you'll note here, spot silver at $69.06, just a little bit higher than March silver futures at $69.05. We got about 2 pennies of backwardation. That's not a lot of backwardation, but the last time we were here, was back in October and September when we saw spot silver just rip like crazy. So we could be hearing about shortages in London again very soon if we're seeing this backwardation here. Hey, either way, guys, I like this shiny. We'll be looking at some charts in just a second as well. But let's touch on the other metals. We got copper marginally lower here, pretty much unchanged, but right around an all-time high for copper. Platinum is ripping this morning, $2,115 an ounce for January platinum futures. That's up $96 or 4.78% this morning. Big move in platinum. We're going to look at a chart in a minute. Shout out to Bob Coleman, who made a monster call on platinum a few months ago on this channel. Palladium is up 3.6%, $18.51 for that one. And even crude oil is higher this morning, probably being pushed higher by that Venezuela and that weaker dollar. Up $1.28, $57.80 for February WTI futures. That's up 2.25%. Let's take a look at some charts and articles about what's going on in the metals this morning here. Gold and silver prices soar to new highs as the yellow metal reemerges as a hedge. So what is CNBC saying? Gold and silver prices soared to new highs on Monday. Gold was last seen at a record $44.45 per ounce, while spot gold was trading $44.14. Prices are up nearly 70% since the start of the year. The metal has soared this year, smashing consecutive price records as risk assets lost ground. Gold is typically viewed as a safe haven in times of economic and geopolitical turbulence. Silver typically tracks gold and was last seen at a record around $68.96. We're higher than that now. Those are rookie numbers. You got rookie numbers in those racket. You got to bump those up. Let's see. Prices have gained 128% since the start of the year. Silver, arguably the best performing asset in the world this year. Maybe there's some shitcoin out there that did more than that, but silver is just ripping here. Stateside, U.S. listed shares of gold and silver miners ticked up in pre-market trading due to outsized fiscal deficits in the U.S., U.K., Europe, and increasingly Japan and China. The monetary value of gold has arguably reemerged, according to Matthew McLennan, head of global value team at First Eagle Investments. The value of gold as a monetary policy hedge has reemerged, McLennan told CNBC, the exchange on December 17th. Gold went from being depressed relative to the nominal assets that you would want to use as a potential hedge against it to more rationally valued. And I think the other precious metal complexes followed it higher with some leverage. And those other precious metal complexes, he's talking about silver and platinum in particular here. So let's look at some of those metals. Look, guys, there's no chart in this one. This is going all the way back to September of 2024, an absolute monster move in silver this year, up more than 138% right now here, trading right around $69. One thing I would mention, after prices went vertical, oh, come on, give me my, let's refresh this so my thing starts working. There we go. After prices started going vertical into October, we saw that big price smash shortly after. They raised their margins. We saw the metal move from New York into London to alleviate the shortage. Now, it looks like those shortages are just now starting to come back with that little bit of backwardation in London this morning. And of course, prices, they just ripped higher coming out of that shortage. And now we're accelerating even faster than we were back in September. So there's really no point in doing any kind of TA here, guys. This is just a FOMO rally at this point, and there's no telling when it stops. Now, we have seen these before, and they have ended in tears before, 2011, 1980. There's a lot of arguments to be made for this time being different, but I'm sure that's in the back of everybody's mind. So, hey, let's just shot in the dark here, just for bragging rights only. Where are we going here? Where is this rally going to top out? I'm sure we're going to see some big round numbers here. Where do we think this one is going before it finally takes a breather? I'm not going to try to call a number on this one, guys. All I can tell you is it's going up in a straight line here. Now, HedgeEye posted some interesting data this morning. An ounce of silver is now worth more than a barrel of oil. This has only happened once before. Thank you, HedgeEye, for putting this one out. And look at here. This is silver to oil ratio. And we are now even higher than we were during the Hunt brothers in 1980. And what's happening right now is not the Hunt brothers, guys. There's no one whale that's out there cornering the market for silver right now. That is not what's happening. This is more supported by fundamentals than the move in the 1980s was. But when you see charts going vertical like this, you know, it does give you a little bit of hesitation, a little bit of pause, doesn't it? If it doesn't at least make you nervous, you're not paying attention. Now, looking at the gold chart here, again, there's just no point in trying to do any kind of technical analysis here, guys. Gold went vertical earlier this year. We had that sell-off in Friday in October off of the higher margin requirements, and now we're heading up. Now, the one thing, gold has been underperforming silver for the last 2 or 3 months or so, but we've got a big move in gold this morning. And I've mentioned this a couple of times. I fully expect gold to start outperforming silver again. Not today. It's not happening yet, but I expect that to start soon. And we are getting one of those big candles here, a nice big green candle for gold. And one of the reasons why I expect gold to start to outperform silver soon, if not today, is the gold to silver ratio. We've talked about this one a lot in the channel here. We are now below 65. And 65 is that level that has, at least for the last 20 years or so, where we have seen a bounce when we go below this level. Maybe not 20 years, maybe the last 10, 12 years. We've typically caught a bounce here. We went below this level during the silver squeeze here back in January, February of 2021. We went as low as about 62 on the gold to silver ratio before silver sold off and gold started to outperform. Right now, we're at 64. Now, I had planned on going to the coin shop this weekend and swapping out some ounces of silver for some ounces of gold just in case that ever happens. Of course, then the Mother Nature had other plans, blew down a whole bunch of trees in my area, and my daughter's friend had a tree go down, so we were there with the chainsaw instead of at the coin shop trading metal this weekend, but which just means my back hurts and I've still got silver, but the gold to silver ratio is still falling, so maybe that was divine intervention there. The last time we saw the gold to silver ratio down this level before the silver squeeze was in the middle of 2016. Again, we bounced off of that level. Or maybe, just maybe, we zoom way out. Maybe we're into something like this now, guys, where we could have like a 10-year period of silver outperforming gold, like we had from the late 90s to pretty much 2013. Maybe we're heading down into the 50s and the 40s even in the gold to silver ratio. But you know what's performing even better than gold, even better than silver right now, is platinum. And this isn't one I typically spend a lot of time on, but I have to send a shout out to Bob Coleman, who came on the channel right here. I pointed it out. It was like May 13th or May 14th. Bob Coleman comes on the channel and says he's making an outsized bet in platinum and his hedge fund that he manages. And he wasn't so focused on automotive or industrial demand. He was just looking at the basics, that platinum was on its way to a significant supply deficit that's going to last for years. And man, look at the move in platinum, up more than 100%. Since Bob came on the channel and made that call. And that move started about 3 days after Bob was on the channel in May to talk about that. So Bob, monster call there. Take a victory lap on that one. That's like a guy hitting a grand slam after calling his shot in one pitch. That's pretty impressive. $2,082 for platinum right now. All right, let's talk about some of these other stories going on this morning. U.S. still in pursuit of third oil tanker in Venezuela blockade. And that's the quiet part right there, guys. We are now blockading Venezuela. It's no longer just blowing up narco boats full of drugs. Now it's an oil fight. It is all about not letting the tankers in or out of Venezuela to try to strangle the Maduro regime economically. Which, by the way, trying to strangle Venezuela economically, I have to wonder, like, what can you do to Venezuela that hasn't already been done to them economically at this point? The country has been dumpster diving for years already. Maybe this works, maybe it doesn't. The U.S. is still in pursuit of a third oil tanker near Venezuela, according to a U.S. official, as President Donald Trump intensifies an oil blockade on Nicolas Maduro's government. The Bella One tanker, a Panamanian-flagged vessel sanctioned by the U.S., was en route to Venezuela to load, said a person familiar with the matter who has not to be identified. The attempted interdiction follows the boarding of the Century supertanker earlier Saturday and the skipper on December 10th. U.S. officials said the tanker being pursued Sunday is flying under a false flag and under a judicial seizure order. Earlier, people familiar with the matter said the Bella One had already been boarded. Trump had been stepping up pressure on Maduro by trying to choke off the regime's main source of revenue. If Venezuela can't export its oil, its storage tanks will fill up with stranded supply, and state-owned Petróleos de Venezuela, or PDVSA, we'll have to start closing oil wells, industry experts say. All right, now keep in mind this third tanker here, guys, the Bella. All right, right now they're saying they're pursuing it. Earlier, the reports were that it had been boarded. It's possible both of those reports are accurate. It's possible some are inaccurate. Maybe we have guys on that tanker already, and for whatever reason, they haven't taken control. I don't really know. There's not a lot of information coming out about this third tanker, but this is the kind of situation that can escalate very quickly. So pay attention to this third tanker that they're currently following in the Caribbean here. Now, this is also this statement here. This is coming from one of the opposition leaders. So keep in mind, there may be a little bit of bias reflected in this. But PDVSA is filling up its storage tanks and cabotage vessels normally used for short internal hauls. It's a matter of days before production starts shutting down, said Evanen Romero, an oil advisor to Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado. And that's the Venezuelan opposition leader who was recently given the Nobel Peace Prize. Because although the Europeans may be clutching their pearls every time a Hellfire missile blows up a drug boat, oh my God, the aggressive administration, at the same time, they're propping up Maduro's biggest domestic rival because they too want a puppet government or at least a Western-friendly government put in power in Venezuela, because the Europeans would just love to buy that Venezuelan oil instead of worrying about getting it through the Strait of Hormuz and past the Iranians. Romero, a Houston-based veteran of Venezuela's oil industry, predicted that an imminent production collapse could trigger widespread unrest as the currency plummets and people struggle to buy food. Again, this guy Romero, he wants that unrest because he wants the Maduro regime to be toppled. The escalation threatens to more severely curtail exports from the country and could pinch production there by limiting supplies of lighter diluent needed to facilitate crude flows. So pay attention to what's going on there, guys. That could affect oil prices. And of course, we hope the shooting doesn't start, although the shooting kind of has started already. Let's hope the shooting doesn't escalate. Meanwhile, we've got Larry Ellison will personally back Paramount's bid for Warner Brothers. This could affect Oracle. Pay attention to this one. Paramount Skydance sweetened its bid for Warner Brothers Discovery, including offering a personal financial guarantee by Oracle chairman Larry Ellison, as it seeks to beat out a rival bid from Netflix. Ellison has agreed to personally guarantee $40.4 billion in equity financing for Paramount's proposed $108.4 billion offer for Warner Brothers. That's according to a statement on Monday. Ellison, whose son David Ellison is CEO of Paramount, agreed not to revoke the Ellison Family Trust. Paramount confirmed that the Ellison Family Trust owns about 1.16 billion shares of Oracle common stock, and that all material liabilities of the Ellison Family Trust are publicly disclosed. So dad is co-signing for the loan for Junior to buy himself a movie studio. And the collateral in that co-sign is 1.16 billion shares of Oracle, which currently trades at $196. So let's see, 196.55 times 1.16 billion. That's about $228 billion worth of family wealth backing up that bid for Paramount Warner Brothers. I don't know if that's going to be enough to change the direction. It seems like Netflix is still the front runner here, but Oracle stock is having a good morning. It had a good day on Friday ever since that story broke about sovereign wealth funds and OpenAI trying to raise a ridiculous amount of money at an obscene valuation for a company that loses money. Oracle stock has been running ever since, trading at $196.37. Meanwhile, we've got some AI bubble news this morning. NVIDIA aims to begin H200 chip shipments to China by mid-February, sources say. They hope to aim. They're cautiously optimistic. They might start to. NVIDIA has told Chinese clients that it aims to start shipping its second most powerful AI chips to China before the Lunar New Year holiday in mid-February. Three people familiar with the matter told Reuters. The U.S. chipmaker plans to fulfill initial orders from existing stock, with shipments expecting to total 5,000 to 10,000 chip modules, equivalent to about 40 to 80,000 H200 chips, the first and second sources said. NVIDIA has also told Chinese clients that it plans to add new production capacity for the chips, with orders for the capacity opening in the second quarter of 2026. Significant uncertainty remains as Beijing has yet to approve any H200 purchases, and the timeline could shift depending on government decisions, the sources say. The whole plan is contingent on governmental approval, the third source said. Nothing is certain until we get the official go-ahead. The sources declined to be identified as the discussions are private. NVIDIA and China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology did not immediately respond to requests for comment. So after all this back and forth, the Chinese might end up telling their companies, no, don't buy the H200s. Just pretty interesting because they've spent the last few years smuggling these things into the country. little bit of trade war here, a little bit of AI bubble, a little bit of everything going on. NVIDIA stock is up 1.2% this morning, trading at $183.10. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. Meanwhile, bourbon maker Jim Beam halts production at Maine Distillery for a year. Again, another trade war story, this time hitting the bourbon industry. The maker of popular Jim Beam bourbon whiskey says it will halt production at its Maine site in Kentucky for all of next year. The distillery will stay closed while the firm takes the opportunity to invest in site enhancements, it told the BBC in a statement on Sunday. We are always assessing production levels to best meet consumer demand and recently met with our team to discuss our volumes for 2026. Distillers in Kentucky, famous for its bourbon, face uncertainty in part due to U.S. President Trump's trade policies. The brand is owned by Japanese drinks giant Suntory Global Spirits, which employs more than 1,000 people across sites in Kentucky. The firm said its other operations in state, including a separate distillery and its bottling and warehousing plants, would continue to run next year, and the visitor center in Kentucky will remain open. Well, we're all looking forward to that visitor center staying open, so that's just great. Jim Beam also said it was assessing how it would use its workforce during the production pause and was holding talks with the workers' union. So no talks of layoffs yet, but if they're halting production for a whole year, what do? You got to retain your people. You don't want to lose them permanently, but are you going to pay them to sit around and do nothing? This is going to be interesting to see how this one plays out. In October, the Kentucky Distillers Association trade body said the amount of bourbon in warehouses across the state was at a record of more than 16 million barrels. According to the association, the barrels of bourbon, which are taxed by the state, have cost distillers a crushing $75 million this year. U.S. distillers have faced retaliatory import taxes on their goods after Trump's so-called Liberation Day announcement in April saw the U.S. imposing tariffs on most countries around the world. The distillers, the whiskey industry, was one target for retaliation. It was an easy one for the rest of the world to try to retaliate against the U.S. And look, all I can tell you guys is I'm doing my part to support the domestic bourbon industry, but I am but one man. And, well, we got Christmas coming up, and let's just say I plan to really do my part over the next week or so. So that's not the only trade war story we got this morning, though. We've got this one as well. China slaps tariffs of up to 42.7% on EU dairy products, alleging damage to the domestic dairy industry. That's kind of interesting. China and the European Union putting tariffs back and forth on each other. Remember, guys, this isn't just a taco thing. This isn't just a Mr. Orange story. Everybody around the world is doing this. This trade war is on multiple fronts, multiple parties. China on Monday announced tariffs of up to 42.7% on dairy products from the European Union following the results of an anti-subsidy investigation that began in August of 2024. In a statement by the country's Ministry of Commerce, China said the EU subsidies for dairy products had caused substantial damage to China's domestic dairy industries. The tariffs are set to take effect on December 23rd. Merry Christmas, a big middle finger from the Chinese Communist Party. And the rates would be determined by the amount of ad valorem subsidy rates from the country's Customs Tariffs Commission. Tariffs range from 21.9% to 42.7%, with companies who cooperated with the investigation subject to tariffs of 28.6%, and those who did not cooperate facing a top rate of 42.7%, according to a statement from the Commerce Ministry. So give us the data that we want that helps us to put the tariffs out there and we'll give you a lower tariff. Give us the data we don't want and the tariffs are going to be twice as high on your company. And miraculously, China ended up getting the data they wanted. Isn't that amazing how that works? And now we've got tariffs on French cheese being sold to the Chinese. Another front has opened in the trade war. Meanwhile, China vodka is fighting for their life. And it seems they have won at least another month. They'll live another month here. They could have died right at the open today. But Vanka averts default as bondholders approve longer grace period at the last minute, I might add. China Vanka, once the country's biggest developer before it succumbed to an unprecedented property crisis, won last-minute support from the creditors to extend a bond grace period in a reprieve that helps it avoid default, at least for now. Holders of Vanka's 2 billion yuan note voted in favor of a proposal to extend the grace period to January 28th, according to a filing on ChinaMoney.com on Monday. The company didn't pay the security by its December 15th maturity, which left it in a five-day grace period that otherwise would have expired Monday. So instead of dying today, they die January 28th, unless they come up with some other plan. But the challenges aren't over. Ivanka's proposal to defer principal payment for 12 months failed to pass, with creditors representing only 20.2% of the outstanding amount voting in favor, short of the more than 90% required. The builder is also trying to persuade investors to accept delayed payment on a 3.7 billion yuan bond that matures on December 28th. So even if they avoid the collapse from this bond, they got an even bigger one coming behind that. This company is hopelessly doomed. They're just trying to delay things. And keep in mind, Evergrande and Country Garden, they still haven't been liquidated. This whole China real estate collapse is still just in this state of purgatory. All these bondholders and banks are sitting on massive losses. It's a lot like private equity and private credit here in the States. Everybody's afraid to admit that what they're holding really has no value. Meanwhile, Japan prepares to restart the world's biggest nuclear plant 15 years after Fukushima. There's a lot of plants still haven't restarted, and they're just starting on this one. Let's see if Jack can pronounce the name. Japan took the final step to allow the world's largest nuclear power plant to resume operations with a regional vote on Monday, a watershed moment in the country's return to nuclear energy nearly 15 years after the Fukushima disaster. Okay, the Kashiwazaki Kariwa, located about 220 kilometers northwest of Tokyo, was among 54 reactors shut down after the 2011 earthquake and tsunami crippled the Fukushima Daiichi plant in the worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl. Since then, Japan has restarted 14 of the 33 that remain operable as it tries to wean itself off imported fossil fuels. Kashiwazaki Kariwa will be the first operated by Tokyo Electric Power, or TEPCO, which ran the doomed Fukushima plant. So 15 years later, they are starting to restart the world's biggest nuclear plant. This is like an 8-gigawatt facility. This is a massive plant. I think they're starting one unit up, one of, I think, 6 units at this site that are going to be restarted. But hey, at least it's fine. You know, better late than never. It's been 15 years. They've had time to get this thing up and running. And last but not least, the United States of Klarna. This is kind of interesting, guys. There's a lot of anecdotes in this article, not a lot of numbers, but there is one paragraph that's pretty interesting, talking about buy now, pay later, and just this, let's say it, outright reckless consumer behavior that's going on right now. People are up to their eyeballs in debt, and they're going even deeper here. For some lenders, the jump in usage was notably higher, talking about buy now, pay later. Market leader Klarna, fresh off an IPO in September, boasted that its November sales volume in the U.S. had spiked 45% from 2024, with Black Friday purchases of things like shoes and beauty products leading the way. A 45% jump in Klarna usage. They're putting Christmas on the credit card, not even on the credit card. They're putting Christmas on buy now, pay later this year. On Cyber Monday, buy now, pay later payments accounted for more than $1 billion of e-commerce transactions in the U.S. That's according to data from Adobe Analytics. That's about 7% of all Cyber Monday online spending and the highest dollar amount ever recorded for BNPL purchases in a single day. Guys, just a reminder, buy now, pay later debt. This stuff is super risky. There are no credit checks that go into this. They're just rubber stamping these loans. The average borrower has a subprime credit score on buy now, pay later debt. They're securitizing this stuff. The ratings agencies are rubber stamping this AAA, selling it to people's pension funds. There is a reckoning coming in buy now, pay later. Everybody's putting, it's basically layaway. That's all it is. But some of these delinquency numbers, the companies are claiming, oh, we only have 2.5% delinquency. It just, I've said this for months, years now, it just doesn't pass the sniff test. With delinquencies rising everywhere else in the consumer credit market, delinquencies are sky high in autos, sky high in student loans, rising in things like mortgages and home equity loans, still not crisis levels, but rising, going up everywhere. But they're supposedly flat at 2.5% and buy now, pay later, which is people with lower credit quality who have nothing to fear from these loans because there's nothing to repossess and it almost never gets reported to the credit score. It just doesn't make sense unless they're lying. Then it all makes perfect sense. Be careful with buy now, pay later, guys. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Steve Wojtas. Thank you, Steve, for supporting the channel. He says, asking why PMs are rising in value, leading to asking why fiat currencies are losing value. Mainstream media, central banks, and government Jedi mind tricks. Nothing to see here. Whoa, you weak-minded fool. He's using an old Jedi mind trick. Yeah, you know, CNBC is very quick to just say, oh, it's optimism about future rate cuts. Maybe that's part of it. Guys, there's a million different reasons why gold and silver could be rising here. Because the decision makers, the people who are running the world of finance, are drunk. They're drunken imbeciles or reckless degenerate gamblers or both at best. Why is gold running? We know why gold is running here. Because the financial situation in the United States is hopeless. Because we made this silly like head fake about cutting spending earlier this year. We called it Doge. Yeah, we laid off a few thousand government employees, but we didn't cut any spending. Spending is up year over year. And so what did we really accomplish? Nothing. The spending problem got worse in the last year. You better own gold. There's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. And since gold had such a monster run earlier this year, silver, platinum, palladium, all playing catch up. Now things are pretty fairly traded, pretty evenly spread out here. Like the gold to silver ratio is in pretty much neutral territory here, at least if you go by the last 40 years. So where do we go from here? I still think gold is due to start outperforming the white metals pretty soon here. But for now, the white metals are still in charge. Thank you, Steve Wortis, for supporting the channel, sir. Ray Finkel. Oh, Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel. He says, longtime lurker, first time live enjoyer. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much. Laces out, Ray. Always laces out. Appreciate the super chat and support of the channel, sir. Uncle Fedster says, happy holidays, Jack and Melonheads. I appreciate the well wishes, Uncle Fedster. Hey, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. All that good stuff to all you guys out there. Thank you so much for the generosity and for the good vibes this morning. My buddy, the Pasta Man, is back. Thank you, Pasta Man, for the generosity. He says, nothing clever to say. I find that hard to believe. You've always got something clever to say, Pasta. He says, just a happy holidays, and thank you to Mish and the mods for showing up every morning. You guys have become my morning coffee buds. Help me make sense of some of the craziness. Thanks again. Thanks again. Thank you so much, Pasta Man. I appreciate that very much. And thank you for everything you do for the channel, by the way. Pasta Man's one of those guys. When news happens, I get it from Pasta Man within a couple of minutes. There's a couple of you guys out there. I appreciate it because between the several of you, I tend to hear about things very quickly. So last night was no exception. Thank you so much, Pasta Man, for everything you do for the channel, brother. Tom Dillon, thank you, sir. He says, instability. Governments of UK and Germany talking about bringing back the draft to go to war with Russia. Uh-oh, 2020's bingo update. Do we need this one? I don't think you need this one, but we're going to don it anyway because merchandising. He says, using stolen assets for loan guarantees to Ukraine, full speed to disaster and destabilizing. So what you're talking about there is the seized Russian reserves, which have they actually made the decision to give them to the Ukrainians yet? Or are they still just debating it? I don't know if they've actually done that, but you better believe whether you were for that or against that is irrelevant because it is contributing to central banks de-dollarizing some of their reserves. That is another thing that we didn't mention. We're talking about why is gold rising. Gold is rising because central banks around the world are not going to sit around and wait for their countries, for whatever reason, to fall out of the good graces of the United States and risk having their assets seized or their reserves seized, which means holding U.S. treasuries in your reserves is riskier than it was before the invasion of Ukraine. And so they're diversifying and they're moving more into gold. And you better believe that's driving up gold. And because of the monster run that gold had, it's leading to this disproportionate rally now in silver and platinum as well, and palladium. Very good point, Tom Dillon. It's absolutely playing a role here. That being said, I don't think there is a BRICS gold-backed currency anytime soon. I just don't see the BRICS countries doing it. I think they'll try to de-dollarize, but I don't think it'll work because all of these countries, they're just as hopelessly dependent on their money printer as we are. And people who are dependent on money printer can't tie their currency to gold. It doesn't work. So they'll have to do something else. Thank you very much, Tom Dillon, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman. Thank you, sir. He's been a Melonhead member for 18 months now. He says 101.06 as the next top for silver. Like and sub. Could you be more specific? Just don't be so generic, so general and so round in your numbers, Tom. Okay. 101.06. Is that like your favorite radio station or something? All right. WGLDFM 101.06. I like this shiny. All right. We have got the first number, 101.06. By the way, I don't know. If you bullseye that, if that ends up being the top for silver, we're going to do something really nice for T.A. Chapman. I don't know what it's going to be, but that is an awful specific number. So if we go to that level, I don't know, maybe a one-year subscription to the Jelly of the Month Club or something, you know, something that gives all year, Clark. Thank you, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel. Appreciate the number. Whoa, we got a pink one in the house. KDM, thank you so much for the generosity. I appreciate that. He says, just want to say Merry Christmas and hope you can use this private equity of mine to invest in 750 milliliters of alternative assets. Ah, I couldn't help but notice the unit of measure you chose there, milliliters. Perhaps we will be supporting the domestic bourbon industry just a little bit harder now, thanks to KDM28. Thank you so much, KDM. Merry Christmas to you and yours as well. Appreciate the generosity and the support of the channel very much and the support of our bourbon distilling friends in Kentucky. Wally2494 says, the age of manipulating the precious metals is coming to an end soon. Metals to the moon. Well, let me just say this. I was really expecting Mr. Slammy to show up Friday afternoon and slam the price of silver down into options expiration, and it did not happen, not even close. Instead, silver rallied, and it rallied even more last night. That is potentially indicative that the pre-OPEC slam we'd seen for the prior 6 months is no more and that they're not trying anymore, which would be in line with the scenario you're describing here, Wally, that the age of manipulation is coming to an end. And finally, price discovery has been unleashed on the metals. Don't threaten me with a good time. I like the shiny. Metals to the moon. Why not? Let's put some silver on the moon. It makes more sense than data centers in space. Thank you, Wally, for supporting the channel. Henry Rifle Owner PA says, Trump sending $2,000 stimmies. I need more silver, Jack. Are we talking about the $1,776 stimmies that are going to the military service members? I believe that was the number that was used in 1776. They just really wanted to make it America's birthday. Yeah, we'll round that up to $2,000. So we're going to be buying some silver with that. And who was it somewhere? Was it it might have been Pasta Man who said this, but somewhere near a military base is like a Ford dealership that's going to have a special on Mustangs or a Chevy dealership that's going to have a special on freaking Corvettes or something. Only $1,776 down, and you can drive away with one of these. There's somebody that's going to be doing that. Yeah, stimmies. Look, generally I'm pretty critical of stimmies, but our service members are underpaid, so good for them that they're getting it. Yeah, it's more borrowing, it's more deficit spending, more money the government doesn't have. But of all the money that the government throws into the fire and wastes, that's one I can get behind. So congratulations, guys. Hopefully that makes Christmas a little better for you service members out there. Thank you for everything you guys do. And thank you, Henry Rifle, for supporting the channel. And thank you to all you wonderful melon heads for having your coffee with us this morning. Just a reminder, guys, we got shows Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this week, and then we're taking Thursday and Friday off. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Thank you so much for the super chats and the generosity, as well as you magnanimous melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below in the description to all that good stuff, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.